speaking today with the Harris County Judge Ed Emmett. Judge Emmett, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak to me today. You became county judge after previous judge Robert Eccles resigned, and then you won election in 2008 to fill out that term. Was it a surprise to you when someone came up to you and said, hey, would you like to be county judge?
Yeah, it was a total surprise, as a matter of fact. I'd been in the legislature from 1979 to 1987, and then in 1989, I moved to Washington, D.C. as Interstate Commerce Commissioner, and then ran a trade association for 11 years after that. And Gwen, my wife, and I, once all the kids had gone off to college, we decided time to move back home to Texas. And I moved back here and purposely didn't move back into my old neighborhood out in Kingwood, where if I still had any political base, it was there. And we moved down to West University, had no thoughts of being in politics, had my transportation consulting office there in the village near Rice. Was, you know, in the phrase, just kind of fat, dumb, and happy and enjoying life. And then had a meeting or two with Robert Eccles because I had helped some people in the 2006 campaign. I'd helped a guy named Tim Kleinschmidt run for state rep for free. I mean, I wasn't charging or anything. And that caught some people's attention, the way that campaign was run. And Robert came to see me and talked to me about his future and what he might be doing. And then one day he came and he said he wasn't going to run again. And one thing led to another, and the next thing I know, the commissioners have decided to appoint me county judge. Prior to that, I think I'd been to one commissioner's court meeting in my life and had really not had much interest in county government. And when I asked why me, they basically gave two reasons. One, a lot of what the county does is transportation and infrastructure, and that was my background. And then two, they really wanted somebody who could deal with the legislature and understand that legislative process, because the county is an arm of the state, and we can't do anything that the state doesn't allow us to do. And so from day one, I came in the middle of a legislative session. And I spent a lot of time in Austin helping negotiate Senate Bill 792 about the toll roads and who would have responsibility for them. And so those were the reasons I was given, and here I am 3.5 years later, still doing the job.
All right. Obviously, right now, every government entity is facing budget issues. What is your, I know you've given a State of the County address earlier this year, but as we look at it now, a few months later, what do the county's finances look like? How bad or good a shape are we in?
You know, everything is relative, but by any measure, we're in very good shape compared to anybody else in the country. We still have AAA bond ratings. There aren't many local governments that have a AAA bond rating. But having said that, because county government is financed overwhelmingly by the property tax, there's a bit of a lag. So we're dealing with revenues that are based on basically a year old appraisals. And as those appraisals begin to fall, which it's anticipated 4%, then we're going to have to make some tough decisions. And September 28th is our mid-year review. We've had a hiring freeze in place. We've had all kinds of measures in place to just kind of hold the line until we get a better feel for where we are. But going into the next budget year, I anticipate there's going to have to be some belt tightening. And beyond that, I personally, and this is clearly something all the commissioners, the Wood County Commissioner Court work, I've got to have them go along with it. But I think we need to go back and look at the way we budget. I personally would favor more of a zero-based budgeting process.
All right. I mean, in 2007, shortly after you took office, the tax rate was cut by, I believe it was a penny.
A penny.
Now, my understanding was that you're the person who ran against you in the primary that year wanted a bigger cut. Paul Bettencourt wanted a bigger cut. You held out for the smaller one. Now, my understanding was the average, you know, the average homeowner would save $12 or something like that, but the cumulative cost of the county was several million. Do we need to review that sort of thing? In retrospect, was that a bad decision?
No, I think that was an outstanding decision. And I think the fact that our tax rate is what it is and the way we've managed our finances all contributes to why we have those AAA bond ratings. It's also why, and you could also flip that. You could say, well, the cumulative savings were also those larger numbers. I remember being in the legislature, and the argument always came up, well, for any individual, an item will only cost this amount. Well, that's how you get into very big spending programs. But we're in good shape, but we'll always be reviewing everything we do around here to make sure that the finances stay solid.
All right. Well, obviously, one thing that will have a big effect on the budget is the decisions that are being made at the state level. With across the board cuts, one big target for that will be things like mental health services. How concerned are you about that?
Well, you know, please note that I'm sitting here shaking my head, almost dismayed by some of the things that are being proposed. I've been giving the speech for well over a year that as a fiscal conservative, if we don't start spending money on the front end to deal with mental health issues, it costs us a lot more on the other end. We've all heard the statistic that on any given day, the Harris County Jail is the largest mental health facility in the state of Texas. That's outrageous. I mean, there's just something fundamentally wrong about that. And so I have been explaining, and part of my State of the County speech was, as much as we want to build transportation improvements and make our area the gateway of North America so that our economy continues to grow, we are going to be eaten alive by some of the cost of these other programs like criminal justice, so that we won't have the money to put into the infrastructure. And one of the best ways we can be spending our money right now is to make sure that we separate out mental health from criminal justice. That's why, you know, the district attorney, the sheriff, I, a lot of others are really promoting the idea of a processing center, so that inmates are processed into the jail, but they're also processed out, so that somebody who has mental health issues isn't given a pat on the head and told to go have a nice day. Instead, they're turned over to groups like MHMRA or Systems of Hope or any number of them, so that they can be put into a system and a regimen that deals with their needs rather than having them just turn back up in the jail.
Now, I mean, Harris County, of course, since you talk about the jail, Harris County, of course, has had more inmates than it can handle in its jails for some time now. There is, as you say, a joint effort. There's a commission, I believe, that you appointed former Judge Caprice Cosper to, that's looking at ways to deal with this. What's your assessment at this point of the progress they have made?
Well, I think they're getting there, but I think there's a realization at all levels of new approaches that need to be taken. Let me talk about the one that I'm more directly involved in, and that's juvenile justice. I didn't know coming into this job that I was going to be chair of the juvenile board, and other than having helped rear four children, I didn't really have any experience in that. But one of the best things that happened to our juvenile justice system was that the bond issue failed. Not often do you have somebody tell you failure was a good thing, but I came in March of 2007. There was a bond issue just a few months later. For a variety of reasons, mainly related to school board politics, the turnout was skewed, bond issue failed. But we were bumping up against, we have a capacity of 250 at the juvenile detention center, and we were bumping up against that nightly. And so the obvious thing is, well, we need to expand. Well, once we weren't able to expand, we signed a contract with the Annie Casey Foundation, started the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, and now on any given night, we probably only have 150 or 160 kids in that jail. That's due not to my work specifically, we're part of it, obviously. The juvenile board is the one that made those arrangements. New district attorney came in and said, we really shouldn't be locking up every kid that we pick up out there while they're away at trial. It doesn't make any sense. Why don't we do something to get them back in the neighborhoods, either with their parents or with faith-based or other groups that can make sure they stay out of trouble. And I think a lot of us realized that what we were doing is we were taking bad kids and turning them into good criminals. And if we can get them out of the system early, then that's better for everybody. They don't then long-term become part of the adult criminal justice system. Well, if we can do that at the juvenile side, we ought to be able to find a way to do that on the adult side. Again, getting the mental health inmates out of the system will help a lot because those numbers are huge.
All right. And the county recently got a grant to start a public defender's office. What are your hopes for that? What would you like to see that become as it develops?
Yeah, my hope for that from the beginning has been the same thing. Of course, I'm not a lawyer, but we just need to make sure that everybody gets a fair trial. I know that sounds silly or too simple, but it costs a lot of money to keep retrying people because they didn't have adequate defense counsel when they came through the first time. And the human toll, as we've seen in some very high-profile cases, is just unacceptable. So my concern from the beginning, and I work very closely with Houston Ministers Against Crime and a whole bunch of groups, met with them regularly, kept having to say, I'm not on that committee. The two commissioners on that committee are Commissioner Lee and Commissioner Garcia, and I think they did a fine job of sorting out the balance, because one of the problems I, as an observer, would have had, even if I weren't county judge, there are a lot of places that have a public defender system where you basically get second-rate lawyers who agree to be public defenders, and that's not fair either. So what we're going to try is a hybrid system. The state's looking over our shoulder. That's fine. We'll see how it works out.
It seemed like initially, at least, the biggest obstacle to this was resistance from the judges themselves. Now they have, for the most part, all signed on to this. But are there any concerns with that?
Oh, I guess you always have concerns, but public officials don't change easily at any level. And so, if you're comfortable in the system you have, then change comes. It's not a natural thing. But we'll get there.
All right. Let's talk about the county election system. As we know, there was a big fire in the warehouse, right. And I have to say, maybe this is Monday morning quarterbacking, but it kind of seems like having all the election equipment in one building maybe wasn't the best idea.
I couldn't agree more. But my guess is, if you checked with any other county in the country, you'd probably find something very similar. This is not something that crossed anybody's mind. The good news is, if there's any good news from the fire, it occurred early enough.
I agree with that.
I sit here and I go, what would have happened if this had occurred 2 days before we were getting ready to distribute the machines? I don't even want to conjecture.
Then I guess the natural question to ask now is, given that this happened and that we largely will be able to deal with it, what have we learned from this? Are we, the other thing that kind of occurred to me in seeing the reactions to this is that it seemed like no one had really, as you say, if it's the same way around the country, no one had really thought about this possibility. Well, now we know it can happen. What are we doing to make sure that it doesn't happen again?
Well, of course, right now everybody is in the county clerk's office is just fully on task to make sure the election comes off and that voters are not inconvenienced unduly and that everybody has an opportunity to vote. I'm sure right after that, Beverly Kaufman, her last act as she leaves as county clerk will be to make recommendations as to what needs to be done. I know the people in our property management group will be looking at it very seriously too.
Okay. you earlier this year made a proposal to remove the elections-related functions from county clerk's office and the tax assessor's office and combine them into a single elections administrator that would be appointed. Some counties, like Bexar County, have this system, others do not. It's run into some resistance, obviously. Why did you make this proposal?
Well, actually, I first thought about it when I first came in as county judge. I looked up and I said, why do we have this bifurcated system where the tax assessor does voter registration, the county clerk runs the election, and just did a little bit of research and found out all the other urban counties in the state have an election administrator. Here locally, Fort Bend and Montgomery County have an election administrator, nonpartisan, that's overseen by a 5-member board, which includes, the county judge and the tax assessor and the county clerk and the chairs of each political party. And it seems to work pretty well. I think they had a few problems in Dallas, but it's worked well, and it tended to remove politics from the whole discussion. And at the same time, made it more efficient. Let's face it, the only reason a tax assessor has anything to do with voter registration goes back to the poll tax. That's a historical anomaly that doesn't make any sense. And so what I wanted to do and what we are doing is have our management services staff look at these other counties and see, does it cost more or does it cost less? How does it work? And if it comes back that it's revenue or it's cost neutral to us and it seems to provide for a more efficient, fair operation, then I would be in favor of doing it. But that's a commissioner's court decision, and I wouldn't begin to presume what they're going to do. And then also, I think there was a lot of confusion. People said, he's trying to rush this. No, that was never the intent. The intent was to look at it, and then after the election, because we're going to have a new county clerk, we're going to have a new tax assessor, then we'll talk about it after that.
Right. I haven't had the opportunity to speak with Beverly Kaufman, but I'm kind of curious. If she were still running for re-election, would you still be proposing this?
Yes, I would. And in fact, I brought it up with her a long time ago, right after I became county judge. And I think her attitude at the time was, we understand our system. Again, it's the basic reluctance to change. But, I'd still be doing it.
Okay.
I think it's something we have to look at. And, all these other counties, the legislature gave the counties the right to do it, set out a very specific formula, and all the other urban counties have already chosen to do it. And like I said, here locally, Fort Bend and Montgomery do it. And in fact, one of the people who was most upset about it came in to see me, and I asked them, I said, where do you live? I meant, what part of Harris County? Instead, they said, I don't really live in Harris County. I live in Fort Bend. I said, well, you have an election administrator. How does it work? And by the time they left, they kind of went, well, actually, it works okay.
All right. We are, as we speak, at the height of hurricane season. 2 years out from Hurricane Ike, what would you say we've learned from that, and how are we dealing with emergency preparedness differently than from before Ike?
It's a constant, I guess what a lot of people don't realize is the Office of Emergency Management has a full-time staff, and that's all they do. And the county judge, by statute, is the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. They're constantly improving and tweaking and figuring out ways to do things better. Main lesson I learned from Ike was you need really two teams. I mean, I think we were pretty well prepared. The evacuation was handled as well as could be at that time. Evacuation procedures have even been improved since then in terms of contraflow lanes and what can be implemented. But once the storm passed, then you had a bunch of exhausted people suddenly have to put their shoulders, back to it and deal with the aftermath. And so now we've organized it to where we're going to have basically a separate group that's responsible for aftermath versus preparation for and dealing with the storm. Because that first group has been up basically a week with very little sleep, and it's a separate item to deal with the aftermath. Like the pods, the famous pods.
Yeah. All right. And it seemed like with Rita in 2005, everybody wanted to leave town. And in 2008 with Ike, most people sheltered in place. Do you think we have the right balance of one way or the other?
For the most part, but one of the bad things about Hurricane Ike, and it wasn't necessarily Harris County, but a lot of people did not leave Galveston Island that should have left. And if the storm had gone over San Luis Pass instead of the other end of Galveston Island, we could have had a much larger disaster, because all you have to do is look at what happened to the Bolivar Peninsula. Well, if Ike had gone over San Luis Pass, then the whole west end of Galveston would have looked like Bolivar Peninsula. And I suspect that there were too many people still on the island. I've already met with Mayor Jaworski. He's well aware of the situation. But what we will always be dealing with is people's perceptions. One of the problems, and I wasn't in office, but with Rita, so many people had Katrina in their mind, and they thought, oh, we're not going to live through that. So from the time I came in, I knew one of my responsibilities was to make sure people stayed in place who didn't have to flee from the storm surge. And for the most part, they did that. Now I've heard people come back and say, I tell you, I'm not going to live without power for 3 weeks again. I am leaving. I don't care what you say. And whenever I speak to groups, I remind them, the storm surge is the dangerous thing. You've got to let people flee that. If you're only in an area that's going to be impacted by wind and you're going to lose power, stay where you are, because first thing you're going to want to do after the storm passes is make sure your property's okay. Well, if you stay where you are, secure your property, and you don't have power, fine, then leave. That won't be in anybody's way. And I think that message is out there. Now the problem is going to be with each passing year, and believe me, I don't want another hurricane to come anytime soon, but with each passing year, you get more people who haven't lived through it, and it's a constant education process.
All right. It seems like there's been a number of advances made towards bringing commuter rail to the area. One location that's being studied is out 290. It seems, though, that 290 already has a pretty heavily used park and ride system out there. Are you concerned that commuter rail would compete with that?
I think commuter rail would only complement that. Problem with 290 we have right now, and I won't get off into all TxDOT funding matters, but I do sit as vice chair of the Transportation Policy Council over at HGAC. With TxDOT not having money, 290 is just going to get worse and worse and worse until we have an ultimate solution for it that can be funded. So anything we can do to add capacity to that corridor for people to get into town is a plus. What we have to do, though, any commuter rail is absolutely useless unless it ties into an efficient metro system, because people get off a commuter train, if they don't have another method of transit to get on to get to their final destination, it doesn't do them any good. But the reason the two lines are being looked at now by the Gulf Coast Rail District,
and we're talking about 290 and down 45 in Galveston,
down Highway 3,
right,
adjacent and parallel to 45, is because the Union Pacific owns those lines. They've indicated a willingness to get off those lines and let them be converted to commuter rail, and that makes it a whole lot easier, because the truth is you could have it up and running in virtually no time if you got the financing for rolling stock and you've got everything connected to where it made sense. Because once the rail lines are there, you just upgrade them to FRA passenger standards and you're fine.
Okay. And, the Gulf Coast Rail District, formerly the Gulf Coast Freight Rail District, seems to be leading the effort on this. You could argue, though, that it's Metro that is the one that actually has the experience building and running trains. How much is Metro going to be involved in this, and how much should they be?
Well, like I said, any commuter rail, which is going to be a heavier rail system, because it's going to be FRA compliant, is going to have to tie to Metro. But Metro has enough on their plate to be, as we've seen here in the last few days, they have enough on their plate just to try and put their system together. The commuter rail, because it's multi-county, it's a little bit dicier. If Metro were to try and talk to people in Waller County, for example, I don't know that that would go so well. But Gulf Coast Rail District is a good, neutral, multi-county. All the counties have joined it. They don't have any taxing jurisdiction, so they're not a threat to anybody in terms of taxes. But they can be the entity that can pull down the federal dollars and the state dollars and even some grants and private dollars to make this whole thing work.
Is it going to need taxing authority at some point?
No, and that would be something the legislature would have to do. You know, those of us who have been in transportation a long time, and in my case, I first became a member of the House Transportation Committee in 1979, so I've been doing this a long time. You look back, and TxDOT used to be the Texas Highway Commission. Then it became the Texas Department of Transportation. But frankly, it's still pretty much been a highway department. And they have now finally formed a rail division, and I think this is a good opportunity for that rail division to work with a local entity like Gulf Coast Rail District and really make something happen. In fact, TxDOT right now is already studying putting the rail back in between Hempstead and Giddings, and the rail from Cap Metro in Austin already comes to Giddings. They don't run service yet, but the rail's there. So we could easily be looking at a line from Houston to Austin, which is really kind of a perfect city pair in terms of distance. Those of us who go back and forth to Austin a lot, by the time you go to the airport and take off your shoes and do all that and get on a plane, you can drive. But if I could ride a train, even if it took an hour longer to take the train than it does to drive, I'd do that, you know, every time.
Okay. Just to get back to T90 for a minute, since you mentioned the need to increase capacity. One aspect of the, you know, 290 widening and rebuild, if you will, was to convert the old Hempstead Highway into a toll road, but that has been deferred by Commissioner's Court. What's up with that?
Well, deferred only in the sense that if you look at our bonding capacity, we're just limited. Under Senate Bill 792, we were given the authority to develop certain projects in our area, and Hempstead Tollway was one of them. But before that, first quarter of 2011, the Beltway will be completed. Beltway 8 on the northeast side is being constructed right now. The next project is the extension of Hardy Street into downtown, and I know that some would ask, well, why wasn't it into downtown in the first place, but that predates all of us. And then Hempstead is right behind that, but Hempstead Tollway has to be part, at least the concept, of a larger project. And the 290 project, as outlined right now by TxDOT, has some flaws in it. And everybody agrees, so we're going back and looking. In the meantime, we are already studying how to make Hempstead Highway itself flow better, even before there's a toll road there, sequencing traffic lights, doing those types of things. Anything we can do in that corridor to improve the flow of traffic is going to be needed, because we're still years off, and we, TxDOT, Federal Highway Administration, Harris County Toll Road, everybody involved, they're still years off from getting something going out there.
The Houston-Harris County Sports Authority, in the news recently, speaking of bonding issues, you know, there are people who have argued that the Sports Authority has essentially outlived its usefulness. It was created to get the stadiums built. Now they're built, although there's still the soccer stadium coming, which the Sports Authority now has a play in.
We have very little, though. They don't have any financial...
Right, they don't have a financial stake. They're more of a management. What does... do we need a Sports Authority anymore?
You need a Sports Authority on paper, how large the board is. You know, in theory it could be one person, because their only responsibility now is to pay off the bonds. And that's run into trouble, really through no fault of their own at this point. The insurer, MBIA, was downgraded. And when that happened, then, you know, that gave J.P. Morgan Chase the right to convert the bonds from 30-year to 5-year.
And that's affected the other construction.
And then once you start paying off that, and if you pay off something, if I came to you and said you have to pay off your mortgage in 5 years rather than 20 or 30, you know, that's a big nut. And so the sports authority, the good news is, and I wasn't here, I'm not taking credit for it, the way it was structured, it never comes back on the taxpayers. And I know a lot of people worried about that. And likewise, if the sports authority defaults, the stadiums aren't at risk. The people who own the bonds are the losers, and they get paid when they get paid. That's not a pretty sight, but it's better than the taxpayers having to bail it out, or we run the risk of losing any one of the three.
What about the Astrodome? Every couple of months you read a story about someone proposing, you know, a movie studio, a theme park, and this, that. I mean, there are some plans out there now.
There are some plans out there now, and...
How realistic is any of this?
Well, I think it's realistic. There was a poll just taken, and it'll be, you know, very public soon. We didn't take it. One of the local television stations, I guess I can say that, took it. And the question, I just smiled when I saw the results, because do you want to tear down the Astrodome? 25% yes, 75% don't you dare tear down the Astrodome. And then they were presented options of what to do with it, and no option got a majority. So it's what I've heard since I came into this office. Don't dare to tear down the Astrodome, but nobody can agree on what to do with it. I personally and believe strongly that sooner rather than later, we need to go in, clean it out, take out the seats. Can't tell you how many people, by the way, want to buy seats from the old Astrodome.
That might defray some of the costs.
A little bit. Clean it out and at least make it available as a venue for festivals and gatherings. You know, clearly the Livestock Show and Rodeo could use it for some of the things they do. Offshore Technology Conference can use it. But we have 75 to 100 international festivals a year, and most of them are out in front of City Hall, which isn't an ideal location. And the public could use it. And then there's also this idea for the Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics Institute, complete with a planetarium. Commissioner Lee's really examining that and trying to come up with a way to finance it, and perhaps that could be privately financed. But I think at this point, what we would want to do is eventually come to the voters and say, here's what it's going to take to clean up the Astrodome and preserve it. And it may not be the final answer, but it's going to cost a fair amount of money, and that'll take a bond issue to do it.
So there'll be an election, in other words.
That's my guess.
Okay. What's the state of the relationship between City of Houston and Harris County these days?
You know, I think it's good. Certainly people noticed when one of the first things I did was have Mayor Parker introduce me at the State of the County address, and then reciprocated, and I introduced her at the State of the City address. That could be our Rice connection.
They say, I don't think Rice University has ever had this much juice in local politics.
But I think everybody agrees that we need to work together where it makes sense. Clearly, we work together on emergency response. Bill White and I almost appear to be joined at the hip at times back during the night. I've had several meetings with the mayor, Mayor Parker, and we've talked about what are the things we can do together.
All right. If you win election this November, what are you going to want to put yourself forward 4 more years, and what are you going to want to be able to look back on and say you accomplished in the upcoming term?
Well, several things. First and foremost, make sure the economy of this region keeps growing. We have to take steps now to live up to our potential, and I could give you the long speech, but I firmly believe this region has the chance to be the gateway of North America. If you just look at a globe and you look at international trade and how much is going to be coming from India and Brazil and Africa and through the expanded Panama Canal, those large ships are going to go one place and they're going to unload and they're going to go back. We should be that place. That won't happen unless we have more efficient rail network, more efficient highway network coming into and out of the ports so that we're not congested, because freight has to move once it hits. So we've got to do that. On the criminal justice side, it is an absolute passion of mine to separate out mental health from criminal justice. And once it's separated out, then to have in place facilities and programs that deal with mental health issues. You know, years ago, the state decided to deinstitutionalize mental health. And while that might sound good to some people, if you don't do anything with the folks that you've just deinstitutionalized, you make their life miserable, and frankly, you cost the taxpayer a lot of dollars. So we need to get a handle on that. You know, the juvenile justice, we're going to keep working and keep going that way. We have to make sure that the emergency management system continues to be strong. You know, Mark Sloan and the people out at that office at Transtar and the Office of Emergency Management have been recognized nationally for the job they do. We've got to be sure they have the resources to keep doing that. And then at the end of the day, though, and I say this only half jokingly, one of the issues you raised, you know, people are going to look back and say, what about the Astrodome? I'm not sure that anything I and Commissioner's Court do over the next 4 or 5 years is going to be more visible than whatever happens to the Astrodome. We'll take those issues up and we'll deal with them. During this economic downturn, we have to make sure that county government continues to provide the services necessary in the most efficient way necessary and in a financially responsible way.
County Judge Ann Emmett, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.